Would you rather build a birdhouse or would you rather build a relationship? I know for me, and I think for most of us parents, the answer is pretty obvious. We'd rather build a relationship. As much as I like birdhouses and want them to look real good, I'd rather have my relationship with my son be the most important thing. However, knowing the answer to that question and actually living it out are two very different things. I know I want to have a great relationship with my kids. I actually think about it a lot. But when life is happening in front of me, I find myself focusing more and more on the task and forgetting about my son or not treating him the way I'd like. For example, I am just now able to go hiking with my boys again. Not because I had an injury or had no opportunity, but it was because I made it not fun. Here's what happened. I took my boys out hiking when they were little, and they were excited to be out in the woods with Dad. And I get on the trail, and I'm like, all right, guys, we can go on this trail. We got 3 hours. We can get to the top, and we can get back. We can see everything. And so that's just how I'm wired. I'm like, there's a task. Let's get there, you know? And trips and falls, wipe off his knee, and let's go. But they were excited to be out in the woods with Dad. I was excited to be out with the woods with them. The relationship should be fine. However, they wanted to go and see that cool stick over there. And then they wanted to go across the trail and see the pop can. Dad, why would somebody leave a pop can in the middle of a trail? And then they'd go and see a cigarette butt. Dad, they could have burned down the woods. And then, you know, they want to see this cool frog. And I'm like, guys, you'll see that stuff all the way up. Let's just keep going, right? And I wrecked hiking because I made it a chore and not fun. So what I wish I would have done was have just forgot my task and thought, how can we enjoy this time together out in the woods? And by doing that, I could have enjoyed many more years of hiking with my boys. And I imagine I'm not alone in this struggle. I imagine many of you, men especially, resonate with the struggle on the focus of relationship or the focus on the task at hand. The get it done mentality or let's enjoy this time together. So for you, it might not be hiking. It might not be building birdhouses. It might be when you plan a day to go to the hockey game. And you're excited about watching the game with your kid, and you're like, I'm going to teach him about the play and how it develops and about my favorite players and how they're doing it so well. And your kid's like, Dad, let's go walk around the arena and see all the lights. And you're like struggling between the relationship and the task at hand, even though it's supposed to be a fun task, right? Kind of like hiking. Maybe it's when you're in the middle of changing your brakes on your car and your kid comes up and says, I want to help. And you're like, I could get this done in 5 minutes, or I don't know when I could get this done. And you decide, oh, I'd love your help. But you still are struggling with, this needs to get done, but my boy's right here. Maybe it's when your kid needs help with their math homework and you decide, you know what, I'll put aside my presentation and that I'm preparing for work, it's really important, and spend time helping her with her homework. But you get there and you're thinking about the presentation and you're like, how can I get her going so that I can get back to my presentation? When you realize that I should be entering in and thinking about how she's doing in math, what she needs, you know, how things are going, and you're struggling. Or maybe it's when you notice the house is a mess and the toys are all over and you're like, get those toys, and then you wait, maybe I should take this opportunity to clean with them. And you can teach, you can build a relationship, but when you get started, the kid wants to play with each toy before they put it away, and you're like, just put it in the box. I think you kind of are getting the picture. Whatever your task is, it's really hard to shift your priority from let's just get this done to let's build a relationship. So how do we do it? How do we shift from let's get it done let's get the task done, to let's build this relationship. Now, I wish I was an expert at this and could tell you exactly how to do it. Unfortunately, I'm like, I started here, and I want to be here, and I'm here. So I'm barely started on this, and my boys are almost grown up, and I'm just like, oh, man, why am I so slow? So I can't give you an easy, clear-cut answer. However, I think the passage we are looking at this morning helps us a little bit, gives us a foundation to start with, and then I have a few ideas that I'm working on that maybe you would like to join me in working on too. So 1 Thessalonians 2:11 through 12 says, "For you know that we dealt with each of you as a father deals with his own children, encouraging, comforting, and urging you to live lives worthy of God, who calls you into his kingdom and glory." So Paul is writing to the people in Thessalonica, and Paul's goal for the people in Thessalonica and for everybody is God's kingdom. It's a great reminder that the goal of any relationship should be God's kingdom. God's kingdom is the best environment for relationships. God is love. He's all about sharing his love and having us share our love, that love with each other. And so any relationship we have should be focused on serving and honoring God's kingdom. And again, most of us know this in our heads. We have that here, just like we know the relationship is most important. However, when life is in front of us, we tend to forget, and our thoughts and our actions betray us. So my first suggestion for focusing on the relationship, for moving from that get it done to relationship, is to remember. The Bible repeats remember a lot because God knows we forget a lot. So acknowledge it's easy to forget, and remember. Keep remembering. Remind yourself daily, you know. It's about God's kingdom. It's about the relationship, you know. That's more important to God, more important to us, really, in the long term, than whatever it is. No matter how important it is. God's a God of love, and he's... sometimes I think God is the most inefficient being. He's so slow in how he works with us. I mean, I'm here, and like he could put me there right now, but he's taking a lifetime to move me. That's not efficient at all. He wasn't a very good engineer, in my opinion. However, that's because what's important is relationship. So, remember. Second follows closely, and that's forgive yourself when you fail. You're going to fail. So forgive yourself, acknowledge it, and admit when you do, and just try again. Keep it getting back on the horse. So remember, forgive yourself when you fail. Third, say you're sorry. I know it's hard to say you're sorry to anybody, but especially to your kids, because you're the adult, and you're supposed to have it all together. You're supposed to be perfect, right? You know your kids will find out that you're not perfect. So why don't you admit it and say you're sorry? And you teach something in the process. You know, I think you want your kids to be people who admit their mistakes, who own it, and who recognize it, say they're sorry. So model it. Say you're sorry when you mess up. And fourth, learn from your mistakes. I wish I could tell you I learned from my mistake with hiking. Unfortunately, I think I wrecked climbing for my boys, and caving, two other things that I really like. But I'm trying to learn and move on. And, I'm really slow at learning this. I'm pretty fast at learning most task-oriented things. If it's get it done, I can learn it. But if it's relationship, man, I'm still working. But God is patient. So let me encourage you, no matter where you are in your relationship with your kids, no matter where you are with relationship with anybody you want to work on that relationship with, try one or more of these suggestions. And move, you know, more and more towards that relational focus, which is the most important thing. Pastor Lloyd.
And I'll let you think about that passage that Jeff introduced. You can throw that up for me. I'm going to... this is the a little broader context of the verses that that are there. Paul talking particularly about the environment of his ministry, and you can see that that he uses a lot of different images in order to get across the way that the church there is working together, and how his preaching is heard, and how he's able to communicate well. Just as a nursing mother cares for her children, so we cared for you. If it was Mother's Day, could do that verse. Because we loved you so much, we were delighted to share with you not only the gospel of God, but our lives as well. Surely you remember, brothers and sisters, our toil and hardship. We worked night and day in order not to be a burden to anyone while we preached the gospel of God to you. You are witnesses, and so is God, of how holy and righteous and blameless we were among you who believed. For you know that we dealt with each of you as a father deals with his own children, encouraging, comforting, and urging you to live lives worthy of the Lord who calls you into his kingdom and glory. There's a number of things that I just want to leave with you for your encouragement this morning. I want to broaden it out. I want to make it less about fathers and Father's Day and more about the way in which all of us do relationship. And the fact is that at times there is a tremendous pressure on all of us to get jobs done. And nobody's saying that in relationship what needs to happen is that nobody gets their jobs done. That would not be fair in the business world. It would not be fair to your employers if all you did was say to your employer, "Who cares about the job? Stack of papers is this high at the beginning of the day. It's this high at the end of the day. Sure, I didn't do anything, but my coworkers love me." Your pink slip is coming real soon. You're not going to last. That's not what we're talking about. This is always within the broader context of who we are as human beings and what our purpose is, and especially within families, and especially within the church, and especially within the community. It's how we are seen to be. How do people view us? What do they see as being important to us? And how do we conduct ourselves in those relationships? And you've heard some great examples from Pastor Jeff as well as from Lloyd. You've seen the guys here struggling to build birdhouse, and you've seen what it means to try and figure out how to do a job and at the same time not get tense or upset about the job, but to still frame it within a relationship. What Paul is saying here is that his preaching, if I go back and you can see there, that what he's talking about is preaching the gospel of God to you, and all of this is the context, right, of how he's doing this. He's working, he's preaching, he wants them to see God as holy, righteous, and blameless. And everything else is how he is trying to get that job done. And he uses relationships and relationship words and metaphors in order to help people to understand how to do this, so that it doesn't become legalistic, so that it doesn't become matter of fact, so that it isn't just about the job. That's the context that he paints for us. What's very, very important to Paul here is the context of the words. And if you go and you search that, what he says is that the environment is loving and affection. He says that when there's loving affection, then he is able now within the context to preach not only the easy stuff, love, grace, comfort, but the hard stuff, God's holiness, sin, the devastating consequences of selfishness. Paul says, if I'm going to preach the hard and the easy, I need a context, and the context in that passage is loving affection. When people know that you love them, they are going to listen to you more. In fact, I would argue if they think you hate them, they're not going to listen to you at all. Right? The moment somebody thinks you dislike them, you hate them, you have no use for them, you think they're useless, you can stop moving your lips. They're not hearing you. Why are you talking? It's pointless. And so the context of words here is loving affection. And there's four things that always end up killing that. Harshness. How easy it is for me as a human being to become impatient and then to become harsh, to become condemning, to become judgmental. Aloofness. That's the easy way out. That's when stuff gets tough, when things get said, when I don't want to hear what's being said, when I don't want to deal with what's being said, when I don't want to react to what's being said, so I go and hide in the garage, under my motorcycle, out in the back 40. That's aloofness. Selfishness is the opposite of an unselfish diligence. Selfishness literally means I give up, not because of that person, because I don't want to make the effort. That's selfishness in its core. You're not worth it, so I'm not doing anything. And hypocrisy is the opposite of spiritual authenticity. Very easily seen. This person says they love me, they never show they love me. This person says they care for me, they never show they care for me. This person says that I'm the most important person in their life, they never show that I'm the most important person in their life. Hypocrisy. And the content and the context of our words is absolutely crucial. Second thing is the shape of the words. And you can see encouraging, comforting, and urging is what Paul says. He says, these are the shape of the words that I use in order to preach, in order to get my point across, in order to teach, in order to inform, in order to help people understand. And in order to do that, I encourage, I comfort, and I urge. And those are very specific words used for a very specific purpose, because encouragement is calling somebody alongside of you so that you can walk with them. It is coaching at its best. It is showing somebody, not just saying something. It is doing something with someone. It is helping someone to understand. That's encouragement. Comforting, to speak someone in a friendly way. Comforting always means that it's non-judgmental. If you comfort someone in a judgmental way, what is that? I am so sorry you failed, because you're such an idiot. Right? Comfort, if you lose the friendliness of the comfort, if there's a judgmentalism to the comfort, if there's an inference that the person is less, that you think less of them, that they are less, that they're that you somehow feel that it's necessary to show them how they failed or why they're bad, there is no comfort in that. Job's friends, and we've said this 100 times, despite some of the bad advice they gave, they were willing to sit with a guy and just mourn. The shock of what had happened to Job was enough that his friends knew now is not the time to speak. Now is just the time to be here. That's comfort. And urging, testifying something is true or something ought to be done. There's an aspect of urging here that we forget. In order to urge somebody to do something, they have to understand why this is better than that, why this is more preferable than that, why this is a good way to do something, that is a bad way. This is a good behavior, this is a bad behavior. Urging is not command structure. It is not instinctively authoritarian. Urging means the person has to understand what they are being asked to do. And as a man and a father and somebody who sometimes can be overbearing and authoritarian, I have to learn very, very quickly to be careful about that one, that I think I'm urging. I'm not. I'm just commanding. Don't make that mistake. thank God that I learned very quickly, most likely because I got married to a wife who instinctively gets these pause moments better than I do, that when pause comes and you take a breath, it is a teachable moment. I'm not saying that these are the best teachable moments I'm about to show you, but I am saying they help me, because I could view them as teachable moments and they help me to grow. Mealtimes. I grew up in a household where mealtime, because the food wasn't that good, sorry, Mom. You have to understand, for 20 years, my mother went through a phase. She was diagnosed with a problem with her arteries and refused to take the medication that the doctor would save her life. And so she decided simply to cook horrible food in order to deal with her own health problems, and then we as kids had to eat it. Right? So I grew up on flax cookies with no baking soda, no sugar, and I think there were seeds in there of some sort. We used them as hockey pucks downstairs to play with, but these were the cookies we took to school. My mother didn't use salt, in fact, no spices. So mealtimes was about talking to each other. And it was easier for me to learn that because the food wasn't good. And so you had to do something else while you were eating in order to get stuff out. But mealtimes were fun. I grew up in a home where everybody shouted and everybody talked and everybody shared. And my wife will tell you, the first time she sat in on a family meal, it was the most frightening experience of her life. She had never seen this many large people get into each other's faces at that tone, at that level, and not beat each other to a pulp. Actually just do that for mealtimes. She said, are mealtimes always like that at your house? I said, are mealtimes not like that at your house? Mealtimes are a great time to talk, to ask questions, to figure stuff out. Travel time. When I'm alone, I like my head. I like being in my head. I like thinking in my head. I like doing in my head. I can relax driving, but you put someone else in the car with me, now you have to make conversation. And so you learn that this is something you can use to your advantage. Travel time became good times to talk, to listen. We did stuff like that. And bedtime. And again, I grew up in a very traditional home. My mother put me to bed. My father was not there at bedtime. And so we made a conscious decision to change that. And I spent a lot of time reading to my kids, reading stories, engaging with them. And it's a very teachable time. Anyway, these are just three. The way in which we talk, the way in which we communicate, the way in which we have a relationship, these are the things that ultimately demonstrate loving affection. And Paul put everything into that context. He said, I came to you in the environment of loving affection, and I preached to you, and I told you about God, and I urged you to do ministry with me. And you were like mothers nursing their children. You were like children as you soaked it all in. As fathers speaking to their kids, the church grew in this environment of friendly, loving affection. That's cool. Let's bow in prayer. Father, you bless us by calling us to something greater than ourselves. You instill us with purpose when you save us and you reach down and you tell us our sins are forgiven and you show us heaven and the glory that is to come. And then you say, in the meantime, just keep living, keep going through your life, but do it with a smile on your face and with joy in your heart. Do it in an atmosphere of loving affection and use my words to comfort and encourage and urge people to live the truth. So, Father, bless us as we do that for each other, as we do that in our families, as we do that in our communities, as we demonstrate that righteousness is important to us, but the right way has to be done in the right manner, always with kindness and loving affection. So bless us as we continue to travel together, as we laugh at our own mistakes, as we forgive ourselves for the times we got it wrong, and as we continue to journey together so that Jesus Christ is demonstrated in all that we say and do. That's our prayer. In Jesus' name, amen. Let's stand together and we're going to close, sing a great song of worship. How great is our God? That's what I want, Lord. Help me. Amen.